Hello, everyone, and welcome to Minute 49 of Season 8 of Movie Around Minute, the Daily Podcast, where we FUBAR our way through the 1998 Steven Spielberg award-winning film Saving Private Ryan, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again is Nick Rehak of the Rabbit Hole Podcasting Network. Welcome back to the show, Nick.
Thank you very much for having me back, man. I appreciate it.
I'm glad you were able to come back, and especially after all your celebrations yesterday.
I mean, I feel like I have to. Not only in that I obviously very much enjoy the program, but I got to see these last 2 minutes through. I can't just up and leave my guys. I gotta fight through it. You know what I mean? Can't just up and go. That's there's true. There's much to be done, and we will do it.
It's true. There's a lot more Giamatti coming.
A whole lot more.
That's true. So minute 49 begins with Caparzo getting very upset and ends with Horvath getting a new pair of underwear. So we ended things yesterday with the runner getting shot and Caparzo watching as the German soldier is still shooting into the runner on the ground. And Caparzo screams, "You sadistic animals!" And Miller just grabs him and pulls him down and goes, "Get down!" Trying to keep him out of fire. And then Hill gives a little more exposition at this point. He goes, "They know we're not in direct contact. They're going to single out the runners." Which is actually a great way for them to explain this to us. Just that short little line basically saying that, we talked about yesterday how how they were able to split up their unit down the middle, that the Germans have taken over the inside part between, cut them off so they don't have any direct contact. So anytime that someone is trying to make contact, that's where they're going to focus their energy on trying to stop, so that there isn't any isn't any reason for the two sides to try to get together and figure out a plan to button up this hole, I guess you could say, of what's going on between them. And then Caparzo starts whining and goes, "Why do they keep shooting him up like that?" And then Miller responds and goes, "Long as his lungs have breath in them, he still carries the message. We'd do the same thing." He goes, "No, we wouldn't." Now, I think that this is a great debate, the idea here, that basically what they're showing here is, at least from Caparzo's perspective, our side is in the right and the other side is in the wrong, and we don't understand why they're acting the way that they are. But what Miller is basically saying to him is that we're the same. You can't look at us as the good guys and them as the bad guys. We're here to try to stop them. Yes, because we don't believe that what they're doing is right, but they think the same things of us.
Yeah.
And I think that's it's a great way to tell that message.
It's great. And it's also like an unfortunate one at the same time, because you can watch these scenes and these minutes over and over again, and you're just like, man, why would they do that? How could they? And you're like, and just like you've said, and like you said, they're doing the exact same thing to us. Like, they're thinking the exact same thing. Why are they coming over here? What are they doing for? Like, they don't know me. I'm just trying to be home with my family, and vice versa. Like, I'm just trying to be home with my family, but I have to come over here and do all this stuff. It becomes this really interesting, like, conversation to have with yourself and with others if multiple people see the movie. But that's also something that I talked about on Monday's episode that I kind of struggled with when I was younger. It was very much this anger of like, how dare they, we need to go back and hit them twice as hard and all this other stuff. But as I've gotten older, I'm just like, no, those are just two people that want to get home to their families. They want to show up. They want to do what needs to be done, whether they like it or not. But at the end of the day, they just want to get home. And it's tough to not have that in perspective, like, all the time.
Right. But I think this brings up an even greater question about, about the duty of these soldiers. And throughout the movie, they're going to touch upon it, are they there as humanitarians, or are they there as conquerors, or like, what is their goal here? Again, spoiler, hopefully most people, if not everyone who's listening to this has already seen the movie, But, you know, Caparzo next week tries to do the humanitarian thing and ends up getting shot and killed because of it. You know, and throughout the movie, they keep bringing up this question, you know, what, it, you know, is fighting this war worth giving up our humanity? You know, like, do, you know, are enemy soldiers, you know, how do you consider enemy soldiers? Are they all completely evil or not? You know, that's, you know, and again, spoiler, but that sort of gives away the end of this movie with you know, Miller ends up dying because he trusts you know, Mickey Mouse or whatever, however you want to refer to
Steamboat
him in
Willie.
This movie. Steamboat Willie, right? That's what Steamboat Willie. So again, he trusts Steamboat Willie, and in the end, Steamboat Willie is the one who, the person whose life he saved, is the one who kills him. You know, and the, you know, the, this movie constantly struggles to show that that fine line between humanity and being a soldier and doing your duty, and what is it that you have to do, and how do you have to do it, and things like that. And they do a great job of it. And this line right here helps encapsulate that also.
Yeah.
You know, it's just another example of, you know, what are we doing? Are we doing the right thing here? And are we doing it the right way? And is this the way to do it? Or do you do it? Or do you find a different way to do it and stuff like that?
And I think it just comes down to, too, it's not even a person-to-person thing. It's just a system base. Systematically, what are we doing? Yeah, you can look at the people that did the things they did, but you, if you do that, you also have to take a look at the people above them that gave the orders and the people above them that gave the orders, and you have to look at the entire system that's in place and be like, hey, whoa, like, we all need to be on the same page, and we all need to hold each other accountable. But there's moments in this film where some characters – get a little too excited. They're a little too in the moment. And even though someone is dead, they'll keep riddling them with bullets, or someone is still alive, they'll just start beating the absolute hell out of them because there's that aggression. There's that someone, they need to be mad at someone or something. That person is the closest thing nearest to them that has them in the situation. So that's where the frustration gets taken out of. And it's hard to say like, hey fellas, let's actually take a look at big picture and see, hey, we're going in because this, that, and the other thing. It's hard to do that because in moments like this, how do you not take it personal? Someone is actively shooting at me. Yeah, they're shooting at you because you're invading their home country, or you're invading a country that they have also invaded. Or
that yeah. They invaded.
So it becomes this like just very just mesh and gray. It's and nothing is really black and white. It's all gray and mixed in. And there's some things that are more good than bad. And there's other things that are definitely more bad than good. But at the end of the day, it's just – it's a systematic thing. And it's also how do you establish – kind of like you talked about earlier, like is it humanitarian? Is it a conquering thing? How do you establish – what are the rules? And there are no rules. Like you can have all the – no, that doesn't exist anymore. That hadn't existed for some time. And it's interesting too to see how some of these characters are even roughly looking the same age – but just two very different mindsets on how they approach things. So that's also been a really interesting thing to watch these characters kind of weave in and out of, is just that like that growth and understanding or lack thereof.
Right, for sure. And I mean, we saw it in the aftermath of the D-Day scenes, you know, where we had characters who we see in the background are looting and, you know, taking souvenirs from the dead German soldiers. Or, you know, you had those two soldiers that are walking towards two American soldiers with their hands up and they shoot them. And they say, oh, what did he have to say? And he jokes out and says, oh, he says, I forgot to wash my hands. You know, that type of thing. Or I need to wash for supper or something like that. You know, this movie doesn't sugarcoat the whole thing. They show that on the side of, you know, the Americans aren't squeaky clean here either. There's both sides are doing wrong things. You know, obviously, if you look at history, there's no question who is doing worse things. But again, when you try and look at it from a subjective perspective, especially on June 9th, 1944, you know, things are seen slightly differently. And they do a great job of it. with the way that this whole thing comes out.
Yeah, because it's not like
And
it's rah-rah America the whole time throughout the film. Like, that is not the case at all. And if that's what you're getting from the film, then you either watch something completely different or you need to rewatch it again with a better understanding. Because like you said, it is – there's no sugarcoating. It's like, this is kind of what it's like, and it's not great.
It's brutal. That's what it comes down to. And I love how Caparzo, who, is this young soldier, starts arguing and saying, no, that we wouldn't do that. And he's completely denying that could possibly – that the Americans could do that. But again, it's known that this did happen. I mean, I'm assuming you've also seen the miniseries The Pacific?
I saw the first, episode or two, but not the full thing. But I imagine since who the enemy is, it's not great.
No, but there they show the brutality of the Americans also.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, because of the brutality and such of the Japanese at the time, I'm sure that when we retaliated with our own version of that, it was less than ideal.
Right. Exactly. And so I mean, I like the way that they present that also, because again, it's showing that nothing is black and white, as you mentioned before. It's much grayer. It's a very dark gray, I guess you can say. And then Miller just leaves Caparzo and just screams, "Wade, get them ready to travel," which is a little strange. Like, why is he asking Wade to help them get ready to travel? I mean, Wade's the medic. None of their men have been injured. The only person that we've seen injured right now is this runner, and I think he's more than injured based on what we can see.
Just a little bit.
I don't think that he will be joining them, for the rest of the movie.
But, I don't see it happening either. But stranger things,
True, very true. It's very true the way that works. But again, it's just strange that he asks Wade to get them ready to travel again. Who? I don't know. And then Wade screams, "Yes, sir," and then Hill screams, "Boyd." And he goes, "Come on." Now, one of the great things about the fact that he mentions the name Boyd here is I said, okay, I'm going to go look up the name Boyd. We'll find out information about who is Boyd, what does Boyd mean, and stuff like that. And then I said, wait a second, this name sounds really familiar. So a few weeks ago, when we were having the letters being read to us, in the War Department, so one of the letters was being sent to a Mr. Brian Boyd, I think his son who was killed or whatever it is. So it's very interesting that they would reuse the same name. You'd think that they would be a little diverse by using different names.
Yeah, something.
Especially, Boyd is not a name that is, very popular. It's not like they're calling someone Jones or Smith or any of the
Smith.
Exactly. Or any of the most popular, names in America, like Chang or something like that. I think it's one of them. Right. But Boyd, that's just a very strange way to do that, but okay. And then, Wade then screams, "Come on." And then Hill turns to one of his men and goes, "Try again. See if you can get Captain Hamill. See if you can let Captain Hamill know we're coming." And as they start moving along, so Miller then turns to Hill and goes, "What's the rest of the Neuville look like?" He goes, "Well, next block's got two-story buildings, both sides of the street. There's a lot of windows." And we hear the radio man say, "Copy, over." And then there's a wide-open square with pretty good cover on the left. And he goes, "Show me." And then he turns to Horvath and goes, "Sarge, hold right here." He goes, "Yes, sir." Now, again, it's great the way that they're basically giving us they're telling us what's going to be happening and what we're going to see over the next few days with the way that he's describing the building and stuff like that. And then
it's almost like a foreshadowing for later on.
Exactly. And then Hill says, "All right, let's stay out of the end fleet and use the buildings. Try left hook." And then Miller goes, "Shoot and scoot. Two of yours, two of mine." So Hill then goes, Hastings, Goldman, up front. Now, we talked a little bit about Goldman the other day, but we didn't talk about Hastings. So have you ever heard the name Hastings before?
I've come across like one or two Hastings in my time.
Okay. Do you have any idea what the name means?
The only thing I can think of is haste, so quick. Someone that's quick, a Hastings, could be someone that, you know, is a runner, delivery service of some sort, some that makes something quicker, just a gopher type. Yeah, just so I'll say that someone that makes someone or something that enables someone or something to be faster than what they are.
Ah, okay. It's actually a lot more simple. It's a lot simpler than that. It's people who come from the area Hastings.
Oh,
in Sussex, you know, you have the.
Oh, so convoluted.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes it was known as Heston or Histon, and then it turned into Hastings. It's also an Irish name. You know, they have a whole list here of where the name possibly came from. You know, it's a very popular Irish name also. Now, okay. Have you ever heard of the Hastings Pudding Society?
I have never heard of the Hastings Pudding Society, but I feel like you made that up a little bit.
I'm pretty sure that's what it's called.
Hastings Pudding Society.
Hastings Pudding, yeah.
Okay.
Hastings Pudding Society. Not. It's a prominent society in Harvard. Really?
Harvard Law?
Yeah, I'm actually surprised that you've never heard of it.
No, I'm completely serious. I've never. That's new to me.
Okay, so it's a social club at Harvard. It's called the Hasty Pudding. Sorry, not the Hastings. Hasty.
I'm still.
Sorry.
Any kind of pudding society, you're throwing me
it's
off.
It's a social club at Harvard University and one of three sub-organizations that are part of the Hasty Pudding Institute of 1770. And they founded this club in 1795. And they claim to be the oldest social club in the colleges in the U.S. And they have a very prestigious reputation, and they are viewed as the final step towards the final club membership. Basically, it has turned into something they have like cocktail parties and theme parties and stuff like that. For some reason, I always thought that it was somehow connected to like National Lampoons and stuff like that. I know there's some sort of connection there. I can't remember what the actual connection is. So if anyone out there actually knows the connection between that and let us know. The motto of the club is Concordia Discourse, which means discordant harmony, and its symbol is a pudding pot, and it was named for Hasty Pudding, a porridge made from molasses and cornmeal that the founding members used to eat at every meeting that they would have.
It's incredible.
Yeah. For some reason, I don't know why, I recall that it's something connected to satire. But I couldn't. They would have mock trials. That's what they would do.
Okay, that's kind of fun though.
Yeah, not really. Maybe they would actually have like various theater productions or something. I don't know. Can't give you more information about that.
Fair enough.
But maybe it's the Hastings Puddings Theatricals. Could that be what it is? It is a company of theater productions. like Fred Gwynne was part of it. Thurman Munster, William Randolph Hearst, Rashida Jones, Oliver Wendell Holmes, Jack Lemmon.
Okay, Jack Lemmon. I mean, I've heard the other ones too, Randolph Hearst and Rashida Jones, but
FDR, Theodore Roosevelt.
okay. I was going to say, was his brother Teddy in there too, or just
Well, it's
him?
not his brother, it's his it was his uncle or his wife's uncle or something like that.
Oh, you know what? We were watching a thing on the Kennedy family, so that's I'm still in brother mode,
Oh,
but
okay. You're in Kennedy brother mode. Okay, that's fair. Yeah. So maybe I guess part of the idea is they had they put up like theatrical satires and stuff like that.
okay.
Okay.
Pretty cool.
Yes. So he sends Hastings and McDonald to go forward. And then Miller goes, Ribbing, Caparzo, fundamentals. And then the radio man turns to Hill and goes, They're still jamming us. Now, what kind of jam is that? Is that raspberry jam? Because only Lone Star would use raspberry jam.
It could be apple.
I guess you didn't get the
Because of
reference.
the apple
Did you get the
juice.
reference?
I did
It's
not.
from
I did not.
Spaceballs.
It sounded funny though. Wow,
Spaceballs.
if that's a space, I'm not going to do well if Oh yeah, that's right, because you're talking about yogurt. He's like, I hate raspberry. Yeah.
No, no, no,
Okay.
no, no. Well, that's a separate one.
Is that am I making it up now? Is that a different
No,
song
it's a different
altogether?
scene, but he goes, I hate yogurt, especially especially whatever kind of yogurt it was. But I'm talking about the one with they get jammed, and they get and they're Michael Winslow is there. The guy from Police Academy doing
Yeah, because he's got I got the boops, the bloops, and the
exactly
creeps.
right. And then they taste the jam and they go, raspberry jam. The only person who would dare is dare send dare jam me with raspberry is Lone Star. So exactly.
We got
Yeah,
you.
exactly. We definitely
I promise you, I've seen that movie a handful of
I'm sure you
times.
have, so have I. Then they give instructions and they go short runs, high and low at the corners. It's going to be tight. Be prepared for close contact. Then he goes, go, up them. Yes, sir. You stay with Sergeant Horvath. Stay right here. And then Horvath says a very strange line. He goes, I'll wear them like underwear, Captain. And he goes, stay with me.
That's why when you said and he gets a new pair of underwear, I'm like, what is he talking about? But I'm like, all right, yeah, that line. That does make sense.
Yes. Yeah. Do you want to go into the history of underwear? Or is that
If you have that information with you, you know I'm
I
gonna
have
lose
that
it.
information.
Let's
Okay,
get
how
into
far
that
back
line.
do you think the idea of underwear goes?
I mean, we got to go as far back as like BC, right? When they're wearing like cloths and things like that. So, let's just say 1100
You are
BC.
correct that it goes back really, really far because it talks about like loincloths and things like that. Yes, you are correct. The whole idea is to basically keep your outer clothing from being soiled or damaged by different bodily fluids and also to lessen friction of the outerwear against the skin. It also can be used to shape the body
Makes sense.
and to provide concealment or support for various parts of the body. In cold weather, people use long underwear in order to provide additional warmth. There are undergarments that have religious significance that people use. Some items of clothes are designed as undergarments, while others are just used as undergarments, like t-shirts or certain types of shorts, where it could be both underwear or outerwear. There are two types. You have the type that are worn to cover the torso, and those are the worn to cover the waist and legs. Sometimes you have underclothes that will cover both. Obviously, there are different style of underwear that women and men both wear. There are different terms for underwear. Some people refer to it as underclothes. And in Australia, they're known as undies or
Okay, makes
Reginalds.
sense.
In the UK,
Reginald's?
in the
Okay.
UK they're known as smalls, which used to be small clothes, and also unmentionables.
All right, I see that.
Okay,
Okay.
sometimes people refer to women's underwear as delicates, and the reason they refer to
Intimates.
that is because that's the recommended wash cycle, which is really funny.
That makes a whole lot of sense when you say it like that. I genuinely have never put two and two together like that before. I thought it was like a fabric kind of thing, or like, hey, there's not a lot holding these together. Be gentle, be delicate with them. But no, that yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Also, there are women's undergarments which can be known as lingerie. They can be known as intimates. In the UK, they refer to an undershirt as a vest. And they refer
Okay.
them to the underpants as just pants. Sometimes referred to as drawers or undershorts. There's a lot of different ways that you can refer to underwear. And as I said, the history goes back really, really far about when people started wearing underwear and things like that. I mean, you have ancient history of the loincloth was where things started. And then but when you want to talk about like modern type of underwear, so in the 1920s, the early part of the 20th century, that's when they started having mass-produced undergarment industries. That's when the Hanes Company became popular and became the top manufacturer by the 1930s. And they just kept making textiles better and better, as time went by. I've always wondered, and I wasn't able to find this information. Have you ever seen the movie Beaches?
No, I think of is that no, but I think I've heard of it, but I don't
Okay,
think
it's
I've
with
ever
Bette
seen
Midler and Barbara Hershey about these two friends and stuff like that. And there's they go to a play that talks about who was the original inventor of the brassiere. And there's a the play is all about that. And I've always wondered what the truth is about it. And I don't know the actual answer to that. I mean there's a New York socialite in 1913 named Mary Phelps Jacob, who created the first modern brassiere by basically tying two handkerchiefs together with a ribbon. It was by accident. She was trying to make something else, and it just it she wanted to something cover something that was sticking out of her corset, and it ended up being used for something else completely. And she ended up patenting it in 1914, and but she was the first person to market this type of garment, because up until then, obviously, women had some sort of piece of garment that was used to in the same manner, but this was the first time that it was something specific for that, instead of it being part of a dress or whatever it is, something underneath taking care of it.
Yeah, it's not built in, it's separate, but
Exactly. So then, I mean, nowadays it's sorry. Then in the 50s and 60s, they mostly it was just like white pieces of clothing that were not meant to be shown, in public. They were, something that was completely covered, and they would use different types of new fabrics, including nylon and spandex and Dacron and rayon and things like that. Then Haynes and BVD started creating underwear that was that had more thickness to them. You know, it wasn't you know, the fabric was thicker and was able to I guess last longer and stuff like that.
I was gonna say, yeah. Probably one of those like, oh, tested for multiple washes, exactly. Or however they want to.
And then pantyhose itself was patented and created in 1959 by Glenn Ravens Mills of North Carolina, and the company continued creating new stuff, and you know, because of the popularity of the miniskirt, so it there was much more of a need for pantyhose. And what are known as tights for Brits, stuff like that. And obviously, you know, we've reached the point where things are even more different now than they were back then.
Yeah, very much so. I mean, the technology alone, like they're able to do like moisture wicking and all this other stuff. It's like, right. Okay, I'll take your word for it.
Exactly. And the latest new thing that was created was boxer briefs in the 1990s, with the idea of you know, taking you know, the longer shape of boxer shorts, but still maintaining the tightness that you had in briefs and things like that. So basically
the 1990s, though, that's what's
1990.
Okay.
Yep. No, they had boxers before, and the idea was to put them together. The idea of boxers and briefs together, you know, mm-hmm. that type of thing. So Horvath ends this minute by wearing Upham as his underwear. I guess you can say. And that's how this minute ends. Did you have anything else you want to say about this minute?
No. I think this one's a little more self-explanatory than the other ones, and a lot of the visual flair that we've already discussed in the other ones. So I'm good for this one.
All right. Okay. So every Thursday we have a segment called "Say What Thursday." Say what? Say what again? I dare you.
I was just about to say.
I double dare you. So the idea behind this this segment is this movie is filled with lots and lots and lots of familiar actors.
It really
and,
is.
Yeah. So what I decided to do is I would go back and you know, what I decided to do is to test my guests' memory of movie quotes from various actors in this movie. Now, obviously, because there are so many actors that appear in this movie, so I can't just give you every, I can't just make you guess out of everybody. So what I decided to do is every week I would choose three different actors that you have to choose from. Okay, so what I will do is I give you a quote, and I will tell you the year that this quote was in a particular movie, and you have to tell me who is the actor who says the quote, and okay. What's the name of the movie? Okay. You know, simple as that. So you have three pretty simple choices. It's either going to be Matt Damon, Tom Hanks, or Paul Giamatti.
Okay.
Straightforward, nice and simple. Okay, so it's one of those three. So the first one is a movie from 2004. All right, and here's the quote. No. If anyone orders Merlot, I'm leaving. I am not drinking any Merlot.
Well, I think you and I both know this. this is obviously Matt Damon. No, this is Paul Giamatti in Sideways.
Exactly. All right. Great. You got that one correct. So next one from 2003. Say one word about this hat and I'm out of here. Remember, it could be Tom Hanks, Paul Giamatti, or Matt Damon.
I want to say, my heart says it's Matt Damon in Ocean's 11. So I'm just going to go with that.
And your heart would be wrong. would you like a lifeline, or would you want to try and guess again?
Let me get just a little lifeline.
Okay. So the lifeline I'm going to give you is, let's see, who else is in this movie? Uma Thurman.
2003, and it's Don't Say Anything About the Hat.
Say one word about this hat and I'm out of here.
It sounds like something Matt Damon would say. I don't think it sounds like something that Tom Hanks would say, but if it's 2003, what are the movies they're doing around that?
Okay, Aaron Eckhart is also in this movie.
Okay, so if it's Aaron Eckhart, it's 2003. When was Thank You? No, that was later. Aaron Eckhart. I'm absolutely overcomplicating this for myself.
Oh, for sure. But that's part of the fun of this.
All right, let me get one more, and then if not, I'll tap out.
It's directed by John Woo.
John Woo. What? Now you really thrown me off.
Remember, it could be Matt Damon, it could be Tom Hanks, or it could be Paul Giamatti from 2003.
You know what?
Say one word about this hat, and I'm out of here.
I think you got me beat on this one because I think I'm in my head that it's, but I think I know what's happening. And go ahead because I'm wrong. So I'm wrong on this one. And who is it and what movie?
No, but I want to keep giving you more chances. Okay, the main actor in this movie is Ben Affleck.
What was Ben Affleck and Uma Thurman in together in 2003? There's people probably shouting at their radios or headphones or devices or whatever. At the top of their lungs being like, hey, you idiot. Hey, you such and such moron.
Could be Tom Hanks, could be Paul Giamatti, or it could be Matt Damon.
I'm just trying to think of Uma Thurman in 2003, where she was.
She was in this movie.
Wow. It's a John Woo film. You know, Ben Affleck is in it. A Thurman is in it. You know, Aaron Eckhart is in it.
Directed by John Woo. The original story of this movie was written by Philip Dick.
Okay. Okay. Not Philip Dick or Philip K. Dick?
Philip K. Dick.
Okay. So we, okay. This is going to drive me insane.
In the end, you're going to tell me I never saw that movie.
Wouldn't that be something? All right, I think I'm going to have to tap because every time I hear John Woo, I just immediately reset and I'm like, well, it wasn't Face Off because that like I don't know why I keep going to Face Off.
It is not Face Off.
John Woo. Yeah, you got to help me out on this one. I'm dying.
All right, the answer is Paycheck.
Never seen Paycheck.
And it's Paul Giamatti.
Ah. So, and you know what? In my head, when the first one, I'm like, okay, Paul Giamatti, and then I'm like, all right, so these next two, it's gonna be Tom Hanks, or it's. So, like, I figured Matt Damon, because, like, you know, they were always kind of razzing him and stuff in the newer Ocean's films by Soderbergh. But then when you said John Woo, I'm like, well, that goes out the door.
Okay. All right. No problem. Yeah, you see, it could be that all five of these are Paul Giamatti movies. You never know. Yeah,
it could be.
Just because I give you the option of the three of them doesn't mean that all three appear this week, right?
That's true.
You know, because I can't just automatically give it away, you know, from that perspective.
No.
All right, the next one from 2006. Okay, yeah, Shoot a Cop, Einstein. Watch What Happens.
Oh, that's Matt Damon of The Departed.
There you go. See, you got one. You got another one. There you go. All right, the next one from 2014. You're feeling it, aren't you? The survival instinct. That's what drove me. It's what drives all of us, and it's what's going to save us. Because I'm going to save all of us.
I want to say again, because I don't think this movie is that old, but it actually is, because I think the wife and I watched this the other day. Is this Matt Damon in The Martian?
It is Matt Damon, but it's not in The Martian.
Okay, another Matt Damon.
And because I said it was 2014, The Martian came out in 2015.
Okay, so close though.
Very close, yes.
Okay.
You want the quote again?
Yes, just once more.
You're feeling it, aren't you? The survival instinct. That's what drove me. It's what drives all of us. And it's what's going to save us, because I'm going to save us all.
Ooh. They're having a birthday. Was it him in Interstellar?
Yes, very good.
Ah, there it is.
All right. And the final one from 1999. Hey, you know, you man. Any moron with a pack of matches can set a fire. Raining down sulfur is like the endurance trial man. Mass genocide is the most exhausting activity one can engage in. Next to soccer.
I want to say that's Matt Damon and Dogma, but I don't think Dogma came out in 99. Can I get it one more time?
Hey, you know, man, any moron with a pack of matches can set a fire. Raining down sulfur is like an endurance trial, man. Mass genocide is the most exhausting activity one can engage in. Next to soccer.
Yeah, that's got to be Matt Damon and
Dogma. Yes, it is. You see, you did very well there.
Of all the quotes, how'd you decide to come up with that one?
and you got it. You weren't sure of yourself. That was the problem.
I think I just had to hear it one more time, and it worked. So thank you for reading it again, because that was one of the longer ones.
Yes,
and I
yes, it was.
As soon as I said that, I was like, "Keith, that is a longer quote."
Yes,
please be right.
And you were. You see very well, Nick. You got 4 out of 5. My original thought was to give you 5 Paul Giamatti ones, but I said that wouldn't really be fair. I gotta mix it up a little bit, you know.
It would have been really funny though if I like got every one of them wrong.
Well, but that's not the point here. The point is just to to have fun and have you enjoy it, and not say I don't want to ever be on the show again because he makes me look like a complete ass. I don't want that.
Oh, I could never say all that. No.
not online. No.
Exactly. There you go. Emails back and forth. How dare you?
Exactly. All right. Well, I hope you had fun playing that game.
Oh, absolutely. I did. When I saw the game, I was like, oh, here we go. Because there was a game that we did. I don't know if it was last season or the season before, where you were like, hey, X amount of time into a film,
right.
And what's going on in that,
that
film?
Was, I believe that that was 2 seasons ago I did that. I think it was with yes, It's a Wonderful Life we did that.
I think you're right, because the Shining one, I was like almost dead on, and it impressed me.
I think I did, you know what, totally I think I did it during Die Hard 2. I think it was during Die Hard 2, yeah. All right, excellent.
I've always enjoyed the
game. So do I. Yeah, that's why I decided to, always include a game every season if I can. I think games are fun. It's just a question of having to find a game that fits in with the movie that works. You know, and
for sure.
And I think this works perfectly because the cast is so vast that it gives us a lot of deep things to look into. But on the other hand, I still want it to be fun and fair. You know, I the point is not to make my guests look like idiots, you know, just to make them to challenge them a little bit, you know.
Some do a good enough job without me, though.
Exactly. Not you, Nick. You never do. All right, Nick.
I wouldn't. Myself.
There you go. There. And I'm the one making the decision, so I don't include you in that. All right. So, Nick, would you like to once again tell people where they can find Nick Rehack?
Absolutely. They can find me over at rabbitholepodcasts.com. I'm a part of 2 programs over there, one of which is Lyrical Innuendo. Myself and Bubba Wheat take a look through the history of music. We're looking at all different types of genres and decades, and we're determining, hey, is this song about sex, drugs, or is it just good old rock and roll? Not going to lie, a lot of the times it's about sex, but sometimes it's not, and those episodes are especially interesting. They're all interesting. Go out and give them all a listen, or to tell your friends' friends to check out Lyrical Innuendo over on the Rabbit Hole Podcasts Network.
All right. Excellent. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Rob Minute. You can send me an email at movierobminute@movierob.net. You can go to my website, movierobminute.com. You can find me on Twitter. You can find me on Instagram. And you can find me on Facebook. So, Nick, you feel like coming back again tomorrow to hit the next milestone by hitting 50, 50 minutes of this movie, 50 episodes.
Oh, absolutely.
Excellent. All right. So until tomorrow, earn this.
Earn this. My solitude. You